March 1st, 1981 at Home of George in Osquitoka, Memphis, Tennessee. Do you want to say something else?
Okay, good evening, everyone.
Yeah, we're gathered here in our living room. Just happy as can be that Oliver's able to visit with us. I mean, he returned from Louisville, where he attended the conference of some kind of a seminar for the Sons of the American Revolution.
Well, I think it'd be nice this evening to talk a little bit about the time that you were courting and when you got married and your recollections of father and mother and the rest of the family. George?
I guess it was, it would be the fall of 37, when you first came out of school. And of course, I heard of the Smith brothers long before I heard of the Smith sister. in some of the freshman orientation and the preliminary programs currently the school opening, they had featured the Smith brothers of cough drop fame, and lo and behold, here was Oliver and Marvin Smith, both from New York, which was about as far away in the university as you could imagine at that time. And they were on a devotional program, so I knew them by name and by sight long before I met their blue-eyed sister. One day at the BYU library, where I had been working for several years, there was this gentle, shy creature with deep blue eyes that was assigned to the same shift I was assigned. And I was introduced to her, and Lois Smith. I guess I looked into her blue eyes and fell in all over.
Yes, we had our picture taken, at least Lois and I, when we came to BYU that fall, in the Mazur building beside the little bust of Joseph Smith, and a little article was written about our coming from Palmyra to go to BYU, and that this being the town where Joseph Smith received his revelations at the beginning of the church restoration.
Well, at that time I didn't make any connection between the Smiths, you know?
Yes.
The Smythe Smiths.
Mm-hmm. And Marvin came to BYU to enroll in winter quarter in January 1938. And while Lois was living at an apartment with some other girls, Marvin and I had a little housekeeping room for ourselves at another location.
Yeah, Lois was living in the downstairs apartment with Elaine Brimhall, whom she had known. Elaine was on a mission in Palmyra when he lived there. And Lois was overjoyed to have her as a roommate.
Yes, that was fortunate.
Present
our
living. Oh, that's right. The only non-family member being Miss Anderson. It happened to be there. I didn't ask especially, but
she was another missionary who had been in the Eastern States. Yes.
So we're a little ahead of the story, I guess. It wasn't really courtship right at that point when we met at the library, but we became good friends. Then, I don't know how long after, Lois moved into the Hinson's home, where you had an apartment with brother and sister Jensen, or sister Jensen owned it, wasn't it? Peter, I'm calling it Jensen.
The Keeler home is where Marvin and I had a basement room.
Yeah, you had a basement room, and then Lois had an next year in the same house.
Was that after?
That was after Marvin came.
Yes.
Because I think you were in the apartment for a while, weren't you, before Marvin came out?
I was in a boarding house.
Oh, okay.
With room and board in the fall semester before Marvin came. And
oh, yeah, that's right.
Then when he came, we roomed together.
Well, the way I remember it is when I came to work at the same library at the same time as you, you asked me at the end in the first week if Brother came by that on Friday night. It was the first week that you asked me. And then you followed me up. Did you let anybody else after you? And you did you?
No, I don't think so.
Student body dances were the main activity on Friday nights.
Yes.
The weekend. And I think that they cost all of 25 cents or 50 cents per couple.
Yeah. We were earning 25 cents an hour, so we could easily afford it.
Yeah. That was the regular student body wage, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
Well, at that time, the minimum national minimum wage was set at 18 cents an hour, so we were doing that well. It was
well above the normal.
Fair Labor Standards Act in 1958.
Well, you kept company somewhat during that year, then, of 38, 39. At that time, Mother had come out from Palmyra with June and Virgil to live in Provo with us. And
well, had they come out before you and I graduated? You and I graduated in the class of 38.
Yes, they came out in the fall.
So they came out in the fall of 38 after you and I had graduated.
Yes, in August or September.
Yeah. Well, after when we graduated in 38, then Lois went back to Palmyra.
Yes.
For the summer.
The summer.
And I guess we corresponded a little bit, although it wasn't as frequent as I would have enjoyed.
Did you drive Marvin's car out there and back, or did you go out otherwise?
I think so. I don't remember which time. One time I went back to some training missionaries.
Yes.
The first time.
Well, the first time you came out with
Dorothy and Ezra?
No, I went back with them.
I see.
They took me home and then in Palmyra.
Yes.
When you and your mother came back that fall, and then you had fire, I guess Marvin Gardens.
Oh.
That was a
terraplane.
Terraplane, yeah. Essex terraplane.
Do you remember driving that?
No, I didn't get my license till I was.
Well, your mother drove it there.
Uh-huh.
I suppose Marvin and I stayed and went to summer school. So we were busy at summer school while you folks went back. Mm-hmm. And Mother had come out to my graduation. Mm-hmm. And back to, we rented a large house in which we could all live, and there would be an extra room or two for students to live, and she cooked for them. And provided board and room, which provided a little income for them. So,
well, that was the Snell House on the north northeast, just below.
Yes,
just below the brow. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I had taken class with George or two in vocal. Chorus, in men's mm-hmm. chorus. I was interested in getting a chance to go on a choral trip with a male chorus, conducted by John Halliday. And So if I took the class during the winter semester, winter quarter, and I'd be eligible in the spring quarter also to take the class and to go on the choral trip, a series of concerts in high schools. So I had been acquainted with him in these classes and this activity, and so it was nice to have him call it our home on 4th East to invite Lois to go on dates from time to time.
Well, I was delighted with the fact that I lived on 4th North and 5th East, and the quickest way to campus was up 4th East. I passed on the street where you lived, you know.
Yes.
So I was interested.
You might mention that during the summer of 38, between the summer school period and the fall term, George and his mother were going on a trip for a visit somewhere, and thought it'd be a good idea to have someone to take care of their home and water the lawns and wash the place, and so permitted Marvin and me to live there for this 2-week period in the latter part of August.
I've forgotten completely about that.
And this was our first opportunity of really meeting your mother before she left and when she came back, and trying to keep the house as she would like it until your return. At that time, then Lois and mother and the other children came to the Snell house, and we moved up there. You might recall during the year 38-39, our brother Don and our father Hiram Smith joined us there in Provo at that Snell home.
Yeah. I'll tell you, to remind me this evening, you know, I'd forgotten that Don returned from his mission to Argentina at that time. Now I remember this. Poncho and his serape and little knitted caps, things that he brought back with him.
He brought back many interesting things to us, and he would tell us very interesting stories of his experiences down there. He had traveled back with a companion through the interior of South America, going up to Bolivia and Peru, then coming by ship up to the west coast.
Didn't he attempt to get up to Panama? He wanted to go to get to Panama before.
I think so.
All the way to South America?
Yes.
He was a friend of his, and they took a long time coming home. Visited all those little countries.
Yes.
Taking the boat home, they came overland.
Don was a great one for liking to travel overland. I remember one of the notable things that he did. One of the first things Lois had told me about Don was on his experience when he was visiting in Arizona. Of course, down in the Thatcher Winslow, Joseph City Snowflake area is well below the Grand Canyon, but Don decided on his way back to Salt Lake City, he was determined to cross the Grand Canyon, so I guess he went up to
Williams
and Flagstaff and Williams, for Williams and Flagstaff, and then up to the south rim. And he and his faithful dog, Bruno, hiked down through the Grand Canyon up the other side. We're proceeding through the Kaibab Forest, which is a much higher elevation. The Kaibab has larger pine trees than the south rim. South Rim has heavy forest, but it's not as thickly forested and very little underbrush. But on the North Rim, he was going along the highway, and a mountain lion crossed ahead of him, not too far, but what it looked about 18 feet long when it crossed the highway. He was, he and his dog both did a double take, went on their way a little more aware of their surroundings than they had been previously.
Well, I heard that the reason he came to the Grand Canyon on foot is that he couldn't stay his dog on the bus.
Oh.
I think he was spending bus money, but he couldn't take his dog, and he wouldn't leave the dog, so he hitchhiked.
Oh.
And that's before hitchhiking had a bad name.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that drove by that way, that meant that. And so he had someone that let his dog get in with him. He rode with him and just started walking home. I think by the word a little bit about how he didn't get here.
Yes, he got back to Salt Lake just a short time before the family was ready to leave on its trip to Palmyra, to move to Palmyra to spend a few years at the Camorra Farm.
I think Doggy was there too.
Yes.
Love my dog.
Remember, the dog rode in a special little cradle on this side of the car.
That was back in the days when cars had running boards.
Had running boards, so there's a place for it to lie.
It must have been hard on the dog. He couldn't change position or anything. Seen that boxing rider.
Yes.
2,000 miles.
The running board was what you stepped on just before you opened the door and stepped into the car.
Uh-huh.
And there's a spot between the fender, the front fender, and the engine cover.
Yeah.
The engine hood. So there was a place there where you could carry things too.
Yeah. Oh, kind of a carry space. That's where Bruno held out, huh?
It was either there or at the front part of the running board.
They sometimes had a spare tire mounted up there.
Yes. This particular car had the spare tire at the back.
Oh.
And you would carry things between the spare tire and the car when you had a big load, like the family did when moving. It was just remarkable that you got all the family. Well,
was
there
that
were
a touring car or an enclosed model?
It was an enclosed model, a four-door sedan.
Oh, that was fancy.
And it had mother and father, Don, Lois, June, and Virgil. So, two parents and four children, and one dog. Well, we should get back to, so that Don, after his return from his mission, came to Provo, and we saw that he still had his creativity and his ideas and his energy and his initiative.
Oh, yeah. He was strong on initiative. Very inventive in his thinking and his... he was especially inventive in his musical instruments. I remember he played guitar. I think he had a guitar with
yes.
him when he returned from South America. But had he invented the bazooka at that time?
Yes. He brought that with him.
He brought the ocarina back.
Oh, did he have the bazooka with him too? Yeah. It was a misplaced collection of plumbing.
Yes.
Somehow he put together to emulate, it was the great bazooka player from Arkansas.
I believe that's right.
Van Buren, Arkansas. Anyway, Don made a bazooka. played some of the most mournful tones I ever heard on an instrument in my life.
It was
usually the life of any party, you know.
Don entertained us, and he was active with the other former Spanish missionaries, that is, those from Latin America, and they had a very happy and busy group there at Wall, including his future wife, Naomi Stevens.
That's where he met me, wasn't it?
At those cabins.
You remember those?
At school.
They met her at school, but I mean in those Spanish club meetings or something. Was she a returned missionary?
Yeah, she had been on a mission to Mexico.
Yeah, so they were in the Spanish club, no doubt.
Well, George, you graduated in the June 1938.
Mm-hmm.
And with your bachelor's degree, that was a big class for those days.
I bet there were
300 or 200?
Yeah, something like that. More than that, the freshman English class now, I think. When we had graduates, something singular happened that particularly embarrassing for me. I don't suppose anyone else noticed it, except maybe the 1,200 spectators. As you recall, we'd line up to receive our diplomas. And the diplomas were stacked on a table up in the old tabernacle up on the rostrum somewhere. And the idea was that the diploma would be handed to you, and then you find the person whose name was on the diploma and give it to the proper person, because they couldn't guarantee that they were all sorted out correctly. There just wasn't time for that. And remember, dear old President Grant, church president, was handing out the diplomas. Someone else was calling the names of the graduates, and as we would receive the diploma, President Grant would hand us the diploma and shake our hands, and we'd pass along and shake hands with President Franklin S. Harris, who was president of the university, and then go on down the other side of the rostrum. And all through, all of these graduates from A through W, they'd come through without a hitch. The names were called, and they received a diploma, and came to George Whitaker, and it was the first diploma that President Grant had glanced at. And he looked at it, and it wasn't my name. So he paused, and then someone near him whispered in his ear, and he handed me the diploma and shook my hand, but everybody wondered, well, what's wrong with that kid?
I didn't realize that.
That's how I remember President Grant. Yeah, it seems like an eternity for me.
You thought perhaps that you were going to be held back and not graduate at all. Or maybe the audience did.
Yeah, I thought, they cut off me now.
Well, actually, I threw off the sequence there going back to 1938.
Yes.
But you returned to school also and did some additional work for a teaching certificate?
Yes. Yeah, I had graduated with a degree in accounting and business administration, but also, economic conditions being what they were, and the job market being as tight as it was, I still had access to the graduate school, so I decided to get my teaching certificate and have a school education.
And you continued to work part-time in the library through that
yes,
school year?
Yeah, I had employment there over the summer, too.
And at the end of the summer, then you were ready to take a job.
Yeah. Well, no, it was included in 1938-39.
39 year. You had an opportunity to take a teaching job.
Right. Yeah, I was interviewed. I accepted for the position in Cedar City, Utah, the teacher.
Well, you hope to have someone with you there at Cedar City?
Yeah, that tended to mature our plans, and I suppose it was in the late fall of 38, wasn't it? We pretty much decided what we were going to do, and
Well, it's another before we got married that I remember.
Well,
it's kind of settled.
In 38 in November, and then we were married in October 39.
About 11 months in advance, you had been planning then.
Yeah, well, we knew we were going to make sure we didn't know when. But I didn't know as soon as he did. And when I met him, I already knew who he was because he'd been on so many programs in the opera. I especially enjoyed the opera because Oliver was in it too.
Okay. You remember when you were Zamil?
Yes, and I found a photograph showing both of us. I was Zamil, and you were
Caspar.
Caspar,
and there we were both in the same photograph, which was used to advertise or record
yeah.
this.
Yeah. They're Freischutz.
They're Freischutz.
And the yearbook picture is.
Yes.
The free shooter. I guess the crux of the whole thing was when the hero has a shooting match with the devil.
And he beat
Zamil used all kinds of tricks to beat the hero, and yet somehow love prevailed and the hero beat the devil.
Yes.
And I don't know whether you stamped your foot and disappeared or what. I've forgotten that part.
Yes, I think there was a cloud of smoke, a puff of smoke.
Yes, they made a puff of smoke.
And I disappeared.
That was Von Baber's opera, Der Freischütz. About the only thing you ever hear from it now is the orchestra.
Yes.
The
lively
orchestra.
Tuneful. Well, after that year then, you had made your tentative plans to be married when conditions permitted, which meant when you got your teaching job.
Yeah, we didn't know how or when, but by that time we determined to go.
Yes.
So when we got the job in Cedar City, that was kind of rejoicing. So we had set our marriage plans for Christmas time, Christmas vacation, originally.
Oh.
And then, after a trial separation, such as when Lois remained in Provo and I went down to Cedar City to teach, we began revising our plans and took it up to Thanksgiving time.
Yes.
And then, lo and behold, here came the teachers' convention in October, and that was the time we couldn't resist.
So you were coming up to Provo anyhow.
I was coming to Provo anyhow, and I decided, well, we might as well get married or something. And
yeah, month's pay.
Month's pay in our pocket. There it goes.
We had an apartment already rented in Cedar City.
When I first went down, I had rented the apartment. I was patching it in this little unfurnished apartment. I guess I had a couch with me or something. When I sat down, I don't know. I don't recall. Anyway, I guess we swept our folks off their feet because they were looking forward to the Christmas time thing.
And
we kept moving our plans up. And it took them by surprise. Anyway, we were married on Friday, the 13th of October.
What an auspicious day.
We've celebrated every Friday the 13th since.
Several each year.
Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, Lois, your parents had moved to Arizona. Her father was teaching school. And they were not able to come back up in October, since you moved the date up earlier than the plan. That was in the middle of their school month, school term. So who accompanied you to the Salt Lake Temple? Who joined you there at the ceremony?
I think Don was there. Be sure Don
I
was
think
there.
So.
You and Marvin, or you or Marvin. Were there one of the witnesses anyway, and my brother-in-law Vernon Larson, my sister Sue,
yes,
was one of the witnesses. I don't know, after the ceremony, there were 5, 6, 8 people or something, very tall there. And I think Don was going with Naomi at the time, and I believe maybe both of them were there.
I don't remember.
Not sure, because they drove us to Cedar City. Uh-huh. I'm sure they were there at the wedding day, because the next day they drove us down to Cedar City in Marva's car.
Got some many things to take.
Yes.
My mother gives a lot of bottled fruit.
Oh, yeah.
And his mother gives furniture from her house and all.
So you started up housekeeping in it.
The airplane was loaded.
All that you could carry. And you mentioned earlier that
your mother was still in trouble, though, wasn't she?
Yes.
It was your father was down and teaching in Heber, Arizona. I think he had gone down alone.
I'm not sure when she went.
I know she's there for the wedding. She gives the wedding ring. Well, we had Saturday all to ourselves in Salt Lake, and we stayed overnight at the Temple Square Hotel. And so on Saturday, we just walked around and looked to exchange one or two wedding presents that we had duplicated. And finally, I trusted to have dinner. And dinner out was a rare occasion in those days, a special occasion. But the next morning, Don drove up and took us down to Provo. And Mother had a nice luncheon waiting for us and invited over George's mother. It was just our family and her there, and she brought roses from her garden.
She had a lovely rose garden at the house.
And this was in mid-October, but
yeah,
remarkable.
Ash roses. And then Don drove us in the company of Naomi, so we wouldn't have to drive that back all that ways back all alone. Well, Naomi came with him to drive us down.
They were engaged to be engaged, weren't they, at the time?
Uh-huh. They married a year later.
Yes, they were both attending BYU that fall.
Uh-huh.
Also.
Did he pull a trailer? Was there some of our stuff? No, it was someone else had brought some of our stuff down. My mother shipped it by some trucker or something. I remember we had this little cast iron stove that she sent us. When we set up housekeeping in this unfurnished apartment that I've been batching out in, and we went over to the Lay Furniture Company, and because Brother Lay was on the school board, and I was an employee of the school board, he extended his credit. I think we spent $85 or $95, which was more than a month's wages, on some furniture. We got a kitchen set and a kitchen cabinet and a stove, a coal stove, and a coal heater for the front room. And we didn't set up because we had a convertible couch that converted into a bed.
That came from your home.
Yeah, Mother had furnished that, and how we got it to Cedar City, but there it was.
She said it was somebody.
Yeah, somebody coming that way. Sent the little cast iron monkey stove for a water heater that had been in our basement in Provo, and Mother sent that down. I had it hooked up and helped get our water and everything. We bought.
That was quite a resourceful beginning.
Oh, we thought we were.
Start up housekeeping.
Yeah. total wages of $76 a month, we thought we were doing right well. $38, wasn't it?
It was $14.
$14, that's right.
Yeah, and then we moved to that furnished apartment, it was $38.
Oh, yeah, that was high rent.
$14 wasn't much, but then it wasn't much of a place because we had to share the bathroom with the family.
Oh.
We owned it.
We had a separate entrance in the kitchen and a, what would have been their living room, but they had the archway closed off between their dining room and their living room. So all we had was, I suppose, one of their bedrooms converted into our kitchen, and their front room converted into our bedroom. And then the connecting hall, right behind the kitchen, connected with their bath. So this was an interesting arrangement.
Well,
but I could walk to work.
So you really didn't need a car?
No.
Very few young couples had them.
Yes. Didn't get a car for, 9 years later.
No, not till we, after.
Charles is a little tight.
Yeah.
When about that. He's 30 years old. There's more.
Any interesting developments during that year while you were in Cedar City?
Well, the most interesting was that we detected signs of morning sickness kind of early in the game, and about the time I was planning to starve to death because my wife didn't feel like cooking. We finally consulted the doctor, and we discovered that she was expecting all right, and then she still kept having bouts of morning sickness that were a little more severe than what we thought ought to be normal. Well, things progressed until the 3rd of July, and it became acute. And fortunately, we were living in the Eden Apartments in the center of town, this fabulous $38 a month rent, and we were living in the same apartment building with our doctor, and we got in touch with him, and he took her to the hospital, and she had a ruptured appendix. So on the 3rd of July, she was operated for appendix, on a ruptured appendix, and on the 18th of, is it the 18th of August that Anne was born?
September.
18th of September, Anne was born. So she's our miracle baby, our first child, our first daughter.
They expected her to be born too young, you know. Just with any operation on your abdomen, he starts to bit, starts to labor.
Yes.
So the doctor told us afterwards, of course there were two doctors in attendance there at the Cedar City Clinic, and they told us afterwards that they had given about a 10-to-1 chance for Lois's survival and no chance at all for the baby. They were both good LDS doctors, and they had our faith in the priesthood too, and they consulted with Dr. Richards in Salt Lake before they did the operation, and apparently all this consultation, they kept Lois well sedated, everything quiet, and they kept the baby sedated for several days until it developed along to the point. So as far as we could tell, it was a normal birth when she finally came into the world.
And her birthday was December?
September.
Oh.
So from July.
Just 2 months.
Yeah. But they had felt that she would had she started labor at that time that was too early to save
yes.
the fetus. So we felt very fortunate. Of course, in this day and age, they could probably save a fetus of that age, but not in those times. I was permitted to watch the operation. It was quite a humbling experience.
Yes. Were you working in Cedar City during the summer at that time?
Yes, I was working for the Utah Parks Company at that time.
And so we was Don working for them that summer also?
Yeah, let's see, Don.
Bus?
Don hadn't married yet, had he?
No.
I started working for the transportation, Utah Parks Transportation Company.
Yeah.
As soon as school let out in the spring,
yes.
in May, I guess, and I was working in the transportation office. So when they started hiring bus drivers for the, they called them dude wranglers, because they would drive the tour buses from Cedar City up to Cedar Breaks and over to Bryce Canyon and down to Grand Canyon, back up through Zion and back to Cedar City when they made the full circuit. And Gronway Perry was the transportation manager, and he took my recommendation and hired Don to be a bus driver.
And now I got a job up in Kaibab Forest.
Oh, yeah.
In a little gift shop and an F shop.
Where the
working
operator was a relative of hers.
Oh, yeah, the Stevens up in the Kaibab.
Jacob Lake.
Jacob Lake in the Kaibab Forest. Uh-huh.
So Don could stop us here.
Yeah.
Every so many days.
Well, then Don was happy when he was assigned to the laundry truck from Grand Canyon Lodge to through the Kaibab Forest, through Jacob's Lake, by the way,
yes.
up to Kanab. So he would make that run from Kanab to Grand Canyon Lodge
yes.
two or three times a week. And I imagine he paused on occasion at Jacob's Lake. Wouldn't you think so?
Wouldn't be surprised. But you folks probably saw him in Cedar City then when he was headquartered there.
Yeah.
Well, so he was acquainted with Grand Canyon that we were mentioning early,
yeah.
at least the north rim of it.
I guess you could call call Naomi his Grand Canyon suite, couldn't you?
Yes. But in the meantime, the emergency operation was also a shock to your relatives in Arizona and in Provo,
yeah.
Lois. I believe George called me in Provo on the telephone to advise me, and we got in touch also with our parents in Heber, Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember.
Or
I think
Flagstaff, it was, perhaps they were.
Yeah.
For summer school.
Come up there, and I think your father phoned me and had told me that he had sensed. Of course, we've discussed this since, so I don't know for sure what occurred. But your father was so close to the spirit that he knew before we notified him that something was amiss. So it really hadn't come as a shock to him. It was just that he wanted to know what it was that was amiss.
Yes.
So
he had talked
about it. We knew we had his blessing.
He and Mother had a car that Marvin had earlier bought, the Terraplane.
Uh-huh.
And so she started from Flagstaff towards Cedar City to come and be with you and assist you. And she got almost there, and it
severed vapor lock at a junction on Highway 89, where the road leaves to go west over towards Cedar City.
Oh, yeah.
It may have been Mount Carmel Junction. I'm not sure which junction it was. But I received word then. I had received word also. And I drove down from Provo to Cedar City to see Lois and George at the hospital and received this word that Mother was stranded over there. And so I went over there and was able to pick up the car. And she was a little unhappy with that car, and so we let her drive my little Studebaker from that time on, I think.
Oh.
Well, after your recovery, Lois, then Mother went back and I went back shortly. And we were much relieved. And were you in Cedar City one more year?
Yeah, we, let's see.
You just taught there the 1 year.
No, we left that fall. About the time school started.
And baby was just a little thing.
The end of the, you know, the end of the tourist season, Union Pacific Railroad had a sort of an upheaval in their organization, and they let the superintendent of transportation let him go, and since I was working for him while I was on the cutoff list at the same time, but Brother Perry put me in touch with, well, he got in touch with the president of the First National Bank in Salt Lake City and asked if he could do something for this young man, and he referred me to ZCMI. Says, Harold Bennett can take care of him, I'm sure. So I went to the personnel department at ZCMI and got a job in their transportation department. Salt Lake. It was in the fall of 1940, I guess.
Yes, so you did not teach the fall school
year
then?
No, just the 1 year. So.
Well, we in Provo had been hoping you'd come back there to work, but it was nice to have two married sisters in Salt Lake then, you and Dorothy, your families.
So I was still there.
Yeah, we got a little apartment on West 2nd South. 2nd West, 2nd South.
The building which now is being demolished.
Yeah, it was pretty dilapidated at that time. The rentals were cheap.
Well, you need to walk to work.
Yeah,
within
it was within walking
distance.
Money.
So, and then later when we moved, we had a big house near the bus route.
Uh-huh.
We didn't have a car. The bus goes right by the house.
Right.
At first year, that was the wrong part of town to be in. We didn't know it.
Well,
the red light
South
district.
Was a, an unsavory district. But
yeah, we were just
the apartment
there.
Building was clean.
We were just there
across the street
one year or less.
Yeah.
Well, I had an opportunity to visit you there once, and I was well impressed with this neat apartment.
Yeah.
Later, you got a home on Canyon Road.
Yeah.
I remember that just for the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
And then by
nice, cool place.
Uh-huh. Lots of trees and
lots
grass.
Lots of shade trees and grass.
And then we moved upstairs in this big old house on 4th South.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I was impressed also with how well you were equipped. You had an electric washing machine.
Yeah.
And you had good ways of acquiring good units.
paid about $8 for that washing machine, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Someone was trading it in, and
yes.
all the appliance dealer would allow them was $8, so we bought it for $8. It was an easy spin dry washer.
Yes.
Vibrated the whole house when it spun. But it was worth the $8. We diverted two or three kids with that machine, didn't we?
Lasted about 10 years, I think.
Your second daughter was born there.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're upstairs.
My mom came to World War twice. And we, by the time our second daughter was on the way, our landlord had owned or had purchased recently a small home on 4th East, just around the corner from, we were on 4th South and 4th East, just around the corner north on 4th East a little ways.
Right
on
5th South.
5th South.
Yeah, we were on 5th South, yeah.
And 4th East.
Yeah. Then on, just between 4th and 5th South on 4th East was this little one-bedroom house, separate home, that he and his wife were going to live in, and we persuaded him to let us have it because it had sort of a little bedroom off to one side, and our growing family, so we got about the same amount of rent, wasn't it?
He lowered the rent, you know.
Yeah.
He's such a nice man, he lowered the rent and moved to, he was right out of that little house so I could have it and have a place as enclosed with a park picket fence.
A fence yard.
So that I could put my little girls out in the yard and they wouldn't they'd be safe and I wouldn't be leaving the yard.
Yeah. Was this when we knew I was being drafted?
Yes.
When he offered to.
Yeah, when he heard you were going to leave.
Yeah, he heard I was going to leave, then he moved to help move us into his little house.
Oh, that was.
And then he and his wife moved back into the.
And everybody else was raising rents, you know. Ours was reasonable to begin with, and they were all raising, but he lowered ours $5, which is a lot of money in those days.
Well, that was very kind.
And Chris George was going into service. And they were a little old couple from England.
Yeah.
Converts to the church. And
oh, yes.
He was a convert, totally inactive, a Saturday night alcoholic, but it hadn't tarnished his heart of gold by any means.
Oh, at what time was this that your entry into the service was imminent?
Well, let's see, it was 1945.
Well, Pearl Harbor was in December 41.
41.
This was early the next year.
No, let's see, it was...
The year after that.
The year after that.
Yeah, it was April, about the 1st of April that I went in 1944, wasn't it? I was in the Navy 22 months and got out in 45, so it could have been April 43, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
You were not in the Army at all.
No, it was the Navy. We had signed up for the... Well, of course, I'd signed up for the draft when I lived in Cedar City.
Yes.
And naturally, when the numbers started coming up, their local boys were given consideration by the draft board, but this interloper from the North was... One of the numbers coming up, and it didn't
yes.
make any difference that I had two children, not to the Cedar City Draft Board. So, with the numbers coming up, I've forgotten how the sequence was determined, but we knew pretty much that our time was running out, and a couple of friends that I worked with had heard about this radio technician program. So we went down to the federal building and signed up for it. And about the same day I signed up for that RT program, we received our draft notice. So I was fortunate in getting into the Navy, I thought.
Okay.
And I still feel that I was fortunate to get into the Navy, even though I was considered a draftee.
Yes.
But I still went through with the radio technician program.
But you've already been signed up.
Been signed up.
With the volunteer program. And did Lois and the girls remain in the little white house?
Yes.
Until you returned?
Yeah. I made two or three departures. We went down to be sworn in and expecting to be shipped out, and they sent us home overnight. Next morning there was a tearful departure, and everything, we had all of our gear and everything to take along. Somehow they sent us back home for another night. Lois was about frantic by the time I finally left. She couldn't wait to get rid of me.
When I saw her coming back, there I cried all the rest of the day you left, and I see him coming home before evening, and it just kind of upset me.
The repeat farewells are hard to take.
Yeah.
Let's see.
In the meantime, your father and mother-in-law said, moved back to Salt Lake from Arizona, along with Virgil and from Arizona, and June from Provo. Mm-hmm. So you had quite a little nucleus of your family there. Mm-hmm. Mark and his wife were there also.
Yeah, and my sister Susan was living in Salt Lake at the time.
She already was living there when you moved to Salt Lake.
Yeah, and she and Lois got together while I was in the Navy. Got together on occasions. So she didn't like the attention company, I suppose.
Donna and Naomi took me out quite a time with them, too. Her father lived so close that I could walk my girls in the buggy and walk to their house. And lived right near Liberty Park, about half a block from Liberty Park. But they didn't stay there very long. It wasn't more than a year, maybe it was less than a year. But I was happy that I could go and see them whenever I wanted to. It was a good long walk, but I had a nice big baby buggy, and I could get the girls both with a ride. You know, it was too far for them to walk, and put both of them in it, and the charger.
Yes.
And she had a little girl that I used to play with.
So her oldest girl, Amy was about the same age as Georgia.
Georgia, yeah. Anne's our oldest, Georgia the second.
And I can remember Minnie riding that old car he had. An old 40. It's an old 40 you go around.
Model A?
Yeah.
What?
Chickens used to get
when he parked it at his house, you mentioned. Uh-huh. Yes. Well, so Don and Naomi did not live too far from you at that time. They had been married in 1940, a year after you, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
We saw them oftener than any of the rest of you, at least a couple.
During that time.
During the time they were in Salt Lake and you were Salt Lake.
And they eventually moved out to the west side of Salt Lake. Remember?
Yeah, when he bought his house on
Pacific Avenue.
Pacific Avenue, yeah. And he did a lot of remodeling work on it.
Yeah, he only paid $4,000 for the house when he got it. I think
he just rebuilt it. He dug a basement.
Yeah, he did a lot of work on it.
I don't need to rebuild it from top to bottom. He put a new bottom on it and built that.
Yeah. Business down there.
So you had plenty of company then during the 2 years George was in the Navy. So you returned in 1945?
Yeah, January 45.
Or 46. Could be after the war.
Yeah, the after the war, so that was when? Concluded in November 45?
Peace was signed in August or September in Tokyo.
Yeah.
But you had been in Tokyo on a vessel? Or
yes, sir.
Yeah.
The vessel to which I was assigned was one of the first five into Tokyo Bay. We preceded General MacArthur by, a week almost, for his flagship.
Yes.
We were a week ahead of the Marines from who flew up from Saipan to secure the airstrips. We were.
Yes.
We had been at Yokosuka Air Base and had installed transmitters and receivers in preparation for the Marines to come up from Saipan.
So
we were about the first on the.
Was yours called a communications vessel, or was it
was
a general?
It was a seaplane tender, primarily, is what we were, but we were assigned to set up communications at Yokosuka Air Base. It was an interesting place. It was as if there were a series of mountains rising right out of the sea, and some of the mountains ringing the air base were left intact, although they were hollowed out for storage and bunkers and so on, and some of the other mountains have been flattened out to form this airfield, and we got to it, and it looked as if it had been abandoned for years, but it was just the fact that the Japanese had stripped every metallic object they could strip to use in their war effort had been taken from that base. They'd even stripped the metal out of the switch panels in the buildings to recover for their war effort. It was going into kamikaze planes and building some small-sized sailing ship, not sailing ship, but battleship. Some very complex.